fighting for America.
You put a Democrat in the office of governor of Idaho, and things will change within 90 days.
Well, yeah, we'll all be worse off, Steve.
Hold on.
Fighting for Idaho.
By the way,
what part of socialism is not Otter part of?
You know, this is such an optimistic. This is such an optimistic.
Tom! He gave us
Tom!
Fighting for you.
Gun-toting Pat, what do you have to say here? Hopefully it's more. Hey, hold on. You have to speak into the microphone.
I said if BS was concrete, you'd be a superhighway.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. Great to be with you. Very, very wet outside. Please be very careful. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Joining us now from the Weekly Standard, author of Clinton Inc., Daniel Harper. Mr. Harper, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So that Weekly Standard, that's a pretty rough crowd y'all hang on. You don't hold anything back in that publication.
Well, why should we? You know, we're an ideological publication where we can sort of speak our minds, and we do.
It's refreshing in America today. Usually everything is so PC, and you can't do this, you can't do that. Speaking of dangerous territory, are you, well, you know, people that write about the Clintons, not a lot of nice things happen to them.
Well, there is a history, I guess, of bad things happening to people who write about the Clintons, but that hasn't really affected me, I would suggest, and I would also suggest that it's usually more about the writers than it is about the Clintons in those cases. Everything's fine. You'll be glad to know the book, they didn't appear to like it, and there were some efforts, I would argue, to sabotage it along the way. But nonetheless, the book was out, and I believe it's been successful, and I believe welcomed in a lot of different corners, some that I wasn't expecting.
Why choose the title Clinton Inc. When defining two of the most fascinating characters in the last 30 years of American political history?
Well, because I suggest that they have what is in effect a business partnership. That, you know, there's a lot that goes on in a marriage that anyone outside of the marriage can't really understand. But what we can understand is that they act very effectively together as a business organization. And the business is politics, which they do very well, as you said. And the other business is money making, which they've also done very well since leaving the White House. And this book tracks how they left the White House in shambles, how they left the White House in a cloud of scandal and impeachment, and tracks to how they came back, how they are where they are today, which is a really remarkable comeback story.
Well, where do you think the roots of that go? You've had people during impeachment, during everything else, heck, in 92 saying, this guy can take a beating but continues on, and I suppose we see that now in his wife. Who fuels the fire, Bill or Hillary?
Well, I think resilience is an important factor in American politics. I think, and I honestly think having a sense of shame also, I would suggest that there's a certain shamelessness to it too. Look, Richard Nixon, maybe he didn't have to necessarily resign. He could have tried to fight back and tried to, you know, be ingratiated. Instead, he lowered his head and he left the American scene after he was disgraced. The Clintons aren't like that. The Clintons constantly want to be in the good graces of the American people. They want to be popular. They want to be well-liked. And they want to achieve more. And that's a unique trait so far in American politics, aimed to have achieved as much as they have.
What did Hillary Clinton learn from the campaign against Barack Obama?
Well, that's a good question. I think if you look back at that campaign, well, when they leave the White House in shambles and they leave the White House in disarray, they have been, you know, Bill has been impeached. What they do is they spend the next few years trying to win over some of their harshest critics, some of the Republicans, so like Newt Gingrich and Congressman Jim Rogan, who helped lead impeachment, to Republicans like Lindsey Graham, where Hillary's in the Senate making good with him. He also helped lead impeachment. But what they didn't realize is that Democrats were angry and upset with the Clintons, that the Clintons had disappointed the Democrats. And so by the 2008 election, the Democrats went with the person they didn't know, Barack Obama, over the person they did know. Democrats felt like Bill Clinton could have been a transformational president. He could have been what Ronald Reagan is to the Republican Party. He could have been to the Democratic Party, but he squandered it. The guy gets caught with his pants down in the Oval Office, and he completely threw away his opportunity. Democrats were upset. They said, all right, we'll go with Barack Obama, forget the Clintons. And so I think in the 2008 campaign, Hillary learns that the Democrats don't really like them, and she needs to win them back, and that's why she becomes Secretary of State. That's why she goes into the Obama administration, because she understands that there's a lot of work remaining for her to do.
Now, one person that we don't know a lot about, but you cover in Clinton Inc., is Chelsea Clinton. In fact, you have a titled chapter, Daddy's Little Girl. What? Where does Chelsea figure into all this?
A prominent player in Clinton Inc., and Chelsea has decided that she wants to be an active active participant in her family business. So they have renamed the Clinton Foundation to the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. Chelsea is she's able to control her parents in a way that aides aren't, and she's able to control aides in a way that her parents are. For instance, as one aide described to me, they said something like, if Chelsea Clinton tells you to go out and buy tulips, you don't ask Chelsea Clinton, are these for you or are these for your mom? You go and you do it, because, you know, that's how it works. And so it's the same sort of thing in other aspects of the Clinton world. When she says something, people have to listen, and it gives her a massive role in Clinton Inc. And it worries some, because some people don't think that she has the experience necessary to play such a large role in what might be a presidential campaign, and they don't think that they worry that her influence is outsized and perhaps might hurt her mother's ambitions.
Yeah, we take a look at the ambitions. Why do you believe, sir, that Hillary Clinton would want to run again at her age? At her age, she's going to be a grandmother. She's successful, had a great career. Her husband, a great career as well. Why do that at her advanced age?
Well, I think very few people who have had an ambition like that can be so close and not give it a try. You know, she has been in the Oval Office numerous times, obviously, while her husband was president. She met Barack Obama there numerous times. While she was Secretary of State, very few people have come that close to the office and have had as good of a chance of winning as her and not run. So I think ambition is a big defining factor in Hillary Clinton's life. And I think it's really an opportunity to make history, to be the first woman president. I think those things are not lost on her, and I think they are things that excite her and interest her. On the other hand, I would add, they aren't necessarily things that interest her husband. Her husband, I believe, I've been told, is conflicted about whether or not he wants Hillary to win. On the one hand, obviously, he wants the best for his wife. But on the other hand, he's cheated on her before, and he worries that his legacy might be at risk if another Clinton, President Clinton, has a good tenure in the office. His legacy would look tarnished in comparison to him. He would be the Clinton that was impeached, while she presumably wouldn't.
Clinton Inc.'s Daniel Harper with us, online editor of the Weekly Standard at 580KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning here. You know, looking at some of the reviews of your book, you even go back to Vince Foster, if you will. You know, the old days of the American Spectator and all that, and having covered those stories, like we all did back in the day. Any new evidence there?
No, I suggest in the book that there are other rumors and unsubstantiated things that will have to be dealt with by Hillary Clinton eventually, but maybe not. I mean, people were always suspicious of her closeness, I understand, to Vince Foster, that they were extremely close. But, you know, I don't know whether, on the one hand, it is ancient history. On the other hand, there are still people curious about all these things. Same with sort of the Whitewater scandal, same with the cattle futures. There are these sort of scandals that have been sitting here on the surface for years. They've never really been resolved. And on the one hand, there isn't really much to dig them up by a large number of people. But on the other hand, there is still curiosity as to what actually happened and what these relationships were really like. And I don't know whether these will have to be come out in the next presidential campaign, but it's a possibility that they will, because there are people who are interested.
Well, one person who is coming out, and that's Monica Lewinsky. In Clinton Inc., how did you cover Monica, and does she play a prominent role in what's going to happen with Hillary?
Well, that's interesting. She just joined Twitter yesterday, and she's gave a public speech for the first time in a while yesterday. Monica Lewinsky is a very interesting character. She was maligned largely by her lover, by President Clinton and his people. They set out to make her look like a stalker and like a wild, you know, lustful woman, as opposed to it being a consensual mutual relationship, which it most likely was. And to be embarrassed and humiliated on a national stage like that, you have to applaud her for coming out and being courageous enough finally to sort of, you know, take the public role that she has. I don't know whether it hurts them or not. I suspect it doesn't. It's just been so long that, you know, the funny thing about the Monica Lewinsky scandal, as far as Hillary goes, is that it really helped her. It really helped her career. It gave her a lot of freedom that she wouldn't have had otherwise. And she was able to say, okay, well, you know, you go deal with this. I'm moving to New York, and I'm going to run for Senate in New York, which she did successfully. So it's a very weird relationship with Monica Lewinsky that Clintons have, obviously. But in all this, you obviously have to feel for Monica as well.
Well, speaking of Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, there have been reports all the time about Bill Clinton's, you know, affairs or, you know, alleged affairs. You know, in your end notes, you cite his Cheat and Hard article from the American Spectator from the old days. You've been covering this. I mean, what do we know in the TMZ world we live in? Does it matter?
I think it does matter. I think we know that it's ongoing, that this is who Bill Clinton is. His reckless behavior is not, you know, he's not able to remove himself from it, that that's just a defining factor of who he is. And I think it does matter. I think it reminds people that these people, the Clintons, with them comes a lot of scandal, and it's not as smooth as people seem to remember 20 years later. Clinton White House was very chaotic. Even as they're running for president, you know, you think of Jennifer Flowers coming out and claiming she had an affair with Bill Clinton. It's just very chaotic in a way that it's not remembered. And I think every time there's another eruption, it does remind people that these people invite scandal every step of the way.
More coming up here at 580-KIDO. If you have a question, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. 618, time for traffic now.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
We continue on at 580-KIDO. Clinton Inc.'s Daniel Harper with us. You know, you write about the former president and the former first lady, former secretary of state, former senator from New York, making friends with political opponents. How do they do that, considering the people that fought so hard to get rid of them, Newt Gingrich, the impeachers, heck, even Chris Ruddy?
Well, I think a lot of the people actually turned out to be, in their own right, flawed. I mean, Newt Gingrich had, of course, his own fidelity problems. He had his own marital problems. And a lot of the people who fought the Clintons sort of were lucky in who fought them. But also, the Clintons realized on a very human level that if you reach out to people and you're nice to people, that they'll probably be nice back. And so the Clintons just started being nice to people. They started reaching out to people. You know, Jim Rogan, the former congressman from California, one of the impeachment leaders, he has exchanged personal letters with Bill Clinton. Newt Gingrich told me that he gets phone calls every once in a while from Bill Clinton where they just talk about politics and stuff. And so they've just reached out and just said, you know, tried to be nice to the people who hated them most. And I think that's really paid off. I think if the people who hated them most no longer hate them as much, I think everybody else has a hard time hating, you know, has a hard time hating them as much either. And so it softens their image over the course of many years and many photo ops and many of these personal touches. And it's taken a decade and a half, but I think Republicans now generally look at the Clintons a lot more favorably than they used to for this reason.
Well, and compared to what they have now, what's the relationship between the Clintons and Barack Obama?
The relationship between the Clintons and Barack Obama is, I think it's a mutual benefit. They understand there's mutual benefit to being close. They're not friends per se, but they realize that each one can help the other person. Barack Obama is a sitting United States president. Hillary, of course, had problems with the Democratic Party and lost to Obama. So she doesn't want a repeat of 2008 if she runs again in 2016. She understands that she needs to keep him a little bit close and be a little bit kind to him. And likewise, it's in Obama's best interest to have a Democratic successor because he has taken to ruling with the pen and the phone, as he says. He has taken to being a very strong executive, and a lot of those actions could be overdone if a Republican becomes the next president of the United States. That's why he needs a Democratic successor. He needs Hillary Clinton. Hillary needs Obama. They understand that they both need each other.
Have they come to grips with how they were beat in 08? It seemed like the Obamas out Clinton the Clintons.
Yeah, look, I don't think they'll ever forgive the Clintons. I don't think the Clintons will ever forgive Obama for beating him. I mean, there's always going to be that sort of grudge. But I think President Clinton has been, in a way, he's not as upset, I understand, because he doesn't see Obama as a very good president. And he doesn't see, and he sees that Obama lacks a lot of his gifts. Bill Clinton can talk to Republicans, can actually have conversations, can deal with them in a way. He was able to get things like welfare reform done and other important factors. You know, Obama hasn't been able to get bipartisan legislation done in not close to the same way.
When we take a look at Bill Clinton and David Schuster, Hillary Clinton and David Schuster, a lot of people don't know who David Schuster is. I used to do some stuff with him all the time. At one time, an up-and-coming reporter, a commentator, a guy that had his own show, and then he crossed the Clintons, and who knows where David Schuster is now?
Yeah, well, David Schuster, he was on MSNBC. He's a liberal guy. He's a nice guy. He's a, you know, sort of a conventional liberal. He asked a question whether or not he thought that the Clintons were, quote, pimping out Chelsea Clinton, and for that they waged war on him in 2008. Schuster's side maintained that the war was waged for political gain and because they wanted to essentially kickstart this war on women and have this narrative that Hillary's being discriminated against because she's a woman. Either way, he was on the losing end, and he got suspended for a couple weeks, and he believes that it really hurt his reputation at the network. He no longer works at NBC. He works at Al Jazeera, actually, where he's been a correspondent, I guess, for the last year or two. And at NBC, you know, it wasn't just that they waged war at him. And owned by NBC, of course, which is owned by Comcast, which is owned by GE. And what the Clintons did is they called board members of the corporate board of GE, who called the CEO, and the CEO turned around and called the MSNBC head and said, why is your reporter calling Chelsea Clinton a prostitute on air? And that's how they sort of went above everybody's head to punish David Schuster. I tell that story in detail in my book. It's a little more smooth the way I've written it than how I retold it this morning.
Yeah, a proud graduate of the University of Michigan, the Schuster. He, again, as you said, a conventional liberal, but he crossed the swords with the Clintons, much to his chagrin. Where do we go from here? You know, people in Idaho, we've got a governor running for a third term. They call it Otter fatigue. Could Clinton fatigue be a factor in this?
It could be. It could very well be, especially if Jeb Bush runs, right? Do we want another Bush-Clinton race? Do we want another, you know, it's just, aren't there other families that can govern us? A lot of Americans might be asking, and there might be that sort of fatigue that could hurt her. But she's running as a different kind of candidate. She's going to run as a elder stateswoman type candidate. Whether that works or not, we don't know. Clinton has never won that way. Bill Clinton, of course, when he ran, he was a young, attractive, outside the beltway, Southern Democrat, Democratic governor. So it's very different even for the Clintons how they're running, and it's not clear that she's going to win. It's not a foregone conclusion. Remember, she was inevitable in 2008 and she lost. She's inevitable now and she could still lose. So these titles and things, they don't really mean that much. We'll have to see how she can adjust the campaign trail, because in the past it's been a lackluster for her.
Final thought, Clinton Inc. and Bush Inc., how linked are they?
They're linked. They have both made peace with each other. They understand that there's benefit to being liked by the other side, and that it can help their reputation to be nice on a personal level to the other side, because it makes them and look good publicly. I think it's helped George H.W. Bush's reputation. It's helped Bill Clinton's reputation, and now it's helping George W. Bush's reputation as well. These are not, I don't want to make it sound like these are only cynical people. There's probably a certain amount of friendship in these relationships, but these are political calculators of the highest degree. They wouldn't have gotten to where they are today without that. And they are very, very good at what they do. And a lot of what they do, there's intention behind it.
Now, it's just amazing that, Poppy Bush in the day after Bill Clinton decimated him, that they would talk. It just seems like an unusual alliance that, again, has gone on to George W. Just fascinating their relationships. They speak fondly of the Clintons, and yet that doesn't stop the Clintons from sometimes from smacking the Bushes.
No, it certainly doesn't. I have a whole chapter in this. It's not, I wouldn't say all family members of the Bush family are on board. There are a couple who think that it's kind of nuts and aren't that big of fans of the Clintons, but I think the rest of them sort of realize that there is benefit to having good photo ops and to having good optics and to being liked by the other side. And I think that's where this relationship, that's how it works.
Well,
I do have a whole chapter on the relationship in my book.
Well, Mr. Harper, we'd love to have you back, and we appreciate your time. Good luck to you and Clinton Inc. and to the Weekly Standard. Thank you for your hard work.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right, it is 6:33, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO.
On Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And it is 6:40, Kevin Miller in the morning at 580 KIDO. Let's go to Fox News Radio's Simon Owen. Simon, good morning.
Morning, Kevin.
So here we have a submarine missing, and holy, Hunt for Red October. We wonder who's responsible.
Well, we could be back in the 80s, I think, the sort of latter days of the Cold War, because for a fifth day now, Sweden is throwing a fair amount of naval resources at trying to identify a mystery vessel that's been spotted three times since Friday in the waters off the Swedish capital, Stockholm, only about 25 miles from the coast, so pretty close. And it's not really clear what it is. All it's presented so far is a long-distance photograph, which is pretty inconclusive. So now there are Swedish naval ships, helicopters, ground troops on the case trying to find this and figure out what it was or what it is, where it's come from, if it was in Swedish waters illegally, and ultimately what on earth it was doing. Now, the rumor is this was a Russian submarine. That is kind of just putting two and two together, given that there have been a number of recent border incidents with Russia in this part of the world. But Russia denies any involvement. And we should say that this allegation of Russian involvement hasn't been made officially by Sweden. It's very much sort of off the record and rumored that Russia could be involved. But one way or another, it's a bit of a submarine mystery.
Yeah, again, going back to the 80s when the subs were the rave, if you will. Does this underscore the relationships between the folks in Europe and Russia, the new Russia, if you will? Tension, if you will, Simon?
Well, I mean, it's certainly tension in that part of sort of northern Europe and eastern Europe, because, I mean, we're talking about the Baltic Sea here, which is or, you know, it's got Sweden on one side, Finland on another side, and then Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, former Soviet Union states, those three, right next to Russia, also on the same sea. And they've been very twitchy about what's been happening in Ukraine and concerned that they could be the next to feel Russia's aggression here. And all of these countries, or most of them, one way or another, have reported some kind of border incident with Russia in recent months. Finland has said last week that Russian military ships intercepted on two occasions one of its research vessels when it was in international waters. An Estonian security service officer we know was detained on the Russian border last month. He is still locked up in Moscow, and Russia and Estonia disagree on which side of the border he was on. And then in Sweden and Finland, in the past couple of months, they've both reported airspace violations by Russian military aircraft doing exercises, sort of war games, what they call kind of muscle flexing. Now, analysts say that actually, if Russia has sent a submarine here, and maybe it got stuck, got caught here by mistake, it wasn't supposed to be seen, but if it has sent a submarine and been caught doing it, that's actually a much more serious incursion than just sending some planes over to do an exercise, even though that in itself could be perceived as fairly aggressive. If you're actually sending a sub into another country's territorial waters, that could be conceived as a fairly hostile act.
Well, and again, as they used to say and still do in Game of Thrones, winter is coming, so the Russians control the oil for Europe and the natural gas. How do you expect that to play out?
Well, I mean, what we're seeing at the moment is Russia getting pretty cozy to China as far as energy goes, and doing a series of deals with the Chinese, which will possibly make it more difficult for Europe. I mean, equally, that Russia is trying to cover its back because America has made it clear that it will try and do some kind of arrangement where Europe can start using U.S. gas now that the U.S. has these new sort of natural gas resources. So, you know, Russia, you would perhaps expect to be finding new markets, but it has been making very public deals, particularly with the Chinese, to show that, you know, it still has plenty of takers for its energy, even if Europe is going to move away. I mean, I don't think we're looking at any kind of situation where, you know, this winter the lights are going to go off or anything like that in Europe. But it does seem that the landscape is changing in the longer term.
Simon, as always, we appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Kevin.
Simon Owen joining us from Fox News Radio, 6:45. Kevin Miller in the Morning coming up in less than 2 minutes. We'll have another traffic report with Dave Burnett. By the way, also, pot is legal in a few states. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking a little bit about the gubernatorial race. And look, we could say we're the place for politics, and that's not an original format, if you will. That's MSNBC. But, you know, we take a look at how this race is tightening up. And I do believe that the same-sex marriage decision will help Governor Otter. But somebody made a compelling argument to me yesterday about this. And he said, you know, and I believe kind of playing off what Brian Fisher has told us here at 580 KIDO, that you really want to make a statement. And maybe somebody in our audience, far smarter than your host, can come up with a solution to this issue. But if Colorado, Washington, and soon to be Oregon have legalized pot, and smoking pot is against the law, the federal law, why can't some governor say, hey, I'm going to pass my own law and I'm not going to recognize the court's authority when it comes to gay marriage? Think about that for a minute. We have the federal government of the United States that is allowing Colorado and Washington to break the law, legalizing pot, legalizing an illegal substance. Where are the great federal courts? Where are the great court challenges to these laws? Where are the men in black, the tyranny of the judiciary, coming in and telling the dope smokers in Washington and Colorado that you can't smoke pot, like they've told people in Idaho that you can't protect marriage? Now, isn't that funny how subjective the federal government can be? And maybe, perhaps, Governor Otter should, in fact, come up with this plan and say, hey, if dope smoking is legal in this state, marriage is going to be the way it is in ours. Now, of course, the feds control all the money, and that's how they, through coercion, make sure that states follow the party line. But just as an overall point of argument here, at 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com, Colorado's breaking the law. Washington's breaking the law. So why can't we say, well, we're just going to follow their precedent and do our own thing, right? 580-5436, 580-KIDO. By the way, Colorado's already having trouble with edible pot. Details in a minute. First traffic next.
Jones, weekday evenings at 7. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580-KIDO, we go to Jim in Middleton. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. Hey, great point that you brought up about where is the opposition on these laws that are being passed, you know, with in regard to the medical marijuana deal. It's still a federal crime, but yet the states are okaying it. And Kevin, and the reason being is because the Republicans are second string Democrats. The Democrats are masters at deception, lying, destroying the country. And the Republicans do the same thing on a slower pace. You know.
Well, we see that now with everything.
Pardon me?
We see that now with everything. You're right. The Republicans won't fight.
Yeah, exactly. And it just galls me, Kevin, that you know, if someone says boo or you're a racist to a Republican, they go crawl in their holes. And they just won't fight. They don't have the backbone. And I've seen the Democrats fight for the most egregious things or unlawful things, and they don't let go. And this is the best that we have to hope for right now.
Well, let's look at gay marriage, okay? Here's the skinny. When all those amendments passed, they didn't give up. They kept fighting. Now that it's over, allegedly, with the Supreme Court, people go, well, you need to give up. Well, no, we don't need to give up because the Dems didn't give up. They didn't give up. They kept fighting.
Exactly. And last week, one of your callers, it was brilliant what he said. He said the separation of church and state. Well, why aren't they fighting with that? When the shoe's on the other foot, you got the left screaming church and state. Okay, so now gay marriage is supposedly the law. Okay. Then you go to the courthouse, but they're telling the religious community, you have to accept this. Well, in all of the religious teachings, it doesn't accept that. Okay, so where's the separation of church and state there? It's just like non-existent.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyways, Kevin, I just wanted to throw that out there Kevin, you ever thought about running for politics?
You know, I'm very blessed to be with you every day, Jim.
Well, you know, I know that, but
that's,
I mean, you've got
calling.
The tenacity and the passion, Kevin, and the backbone. It's just something to think about there.
Well, thank you for that wonderful compliment, sir.
Okay, Kevin, take care. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye. To Gene and Cuna at 580-KIDO. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, my brother. I got something to throw out to everybody. Kevin Miller for governor. There we go. The only man on the radio that tells the truth.
Well, thank you, and that'll be appearing soon in our official announcement here. That'll be our own October surprise.
In theaters near you, right?
Exactly.
Listen, I had one comment for that gentleman about this quote-unquote submarine they think is lost or something like that. Back in the day, 73, when I was headed over to Barcelona, Spain, on the carrier of the Independence, we went to general quarters real quick because we felt we were being tracked, and radar thought we was being tracked. Sonar thought we was being tracked by a submarine. Well, the sonar couldn't pick up on exactly what it was, but it had looked like it had a fuselage. It was really big. Turned out to be a gray whale. They couldn't detect the fins, couldn't detect anything except the mass and the bulk of what it was. And it looked like, for all intents and purposes, when they dropped the sonar buoy in, it looked like a submarine. So I'm just wondering if what these guys are seeing, because it appears and it disappears. It appears and it disappears. Well, until this gray whale surfaced and went for air, did you really know what it was? So perhaps, maybe, maybe not, who knows? And as far as this pot deal with Colorado and that, the only reason the government didn't legalize pot long before now is because they couldn't figure out how to get their cut.
Right.
Now, in World War II, if you remember right, they got their cut because they had all kinds of things legalized for the men to come back with shell shock. Now it's PTSD, or it was battle fatigue, or something else. Now it's like, well, they get their cut out of the deal. So yeah, hey, let's legalize it. We can get more money. We can get more revenue and all this good stuff. I don't know how gay marriage plays into that, but perhaps through perhaps legislation.
Gene, great point. Yeah. I got to run. God bless.
Okay, God bless.
Traffic now at 580 KIDO.